On this week's episode of The Hollywood Outsider, we are going to look at bad TV couples, classic movie monsters, just in time for October, and we're going to look back at summer with a perfect summer movie soundtrack. Let's get on with the show! My name is Aaron Peterson, and as you know, my fellow hosts are Amanda Sink and John Davenport, and we're doing every other week, as you guys might know, but we try to fill in the gaps for the other content so you're not just waiting for us every week. But because theaters have been going down and whatnot, we've been going every other week, we're going to do that just for the foreseeable future. We're going to change that soon, but we just wanted to let you guys know that's why we're doing it, in case you haven't listened in a couple weeks. So for this episode, we're going to look back at some of the more popular topics back from earlier in the year, when things looked bright and cheery. We're going to look at bad TV couples, and then classic movie monsters, and then, of course, our perfect summer movie soundtrack, which you can find that playlist on Spotify. So details for that as you listen. And you know, it's important to note that Regal Cinemas have decided that they are going to temporarily close for the time being because James Bond's No Time to Die has been pushed back until next year. So that is basically Cineworld, Regal Cinema, and Picture House movie theaters. They have decided they're going to temporarily close until movies start coming back, until there's a real release schedule. Now, they did go on the record and say when Wonder Woman 2 comes out, if it still holds a Christmas date, they will reopen for it. There's still hope. Don't give up. There's still hope. And AMC theaters actually said they are not closing. They are going to remain open and keep pumping out as much content as you can. Now, I know some people are like, well, what possibly could be out there? I've gone to the theater every single week since AMC reopened, which is about a month and a half or whatever, and I've seen a new movie every single time. So there is content out there. Plus, there's a ton of great stuff on video on demand. There's a lot of new movies, and I have talked about several. I just want to point out a few. Miss White Light is now on video on demand. I love this movie. It just came out on video on demand. I saw it at a film festival, and it's one of my favorite movies of the year. Just a beautiful film that really looks at the mortality and our personal struggles to accept mortality. And it's also very quirky. It's very funny. It's very interesting. It's just very intriguing. Definitely find it. Miss White Light. If you're looking for something spooky, The Curse of Audrey Earnshaw is a good indie thriller that just released a video on demand. If you're looking for something spooky but ridiculous, Hubie Halloween is on Netflix with Adam Sandler doing one of his weird little character voices. You know, he's doing that. Which is hit or miss, you know, it's either Little Nicky or it's Waterboy. It can go either way. So you decide where you want to be on that. And before we get to our monsters, bad TV couples, and summer tunes, we are giving away 5 digital copies of a film I really enjoyed. I talked about it last week. It's really entertaining and it's new to video on demand. Just now, it's available right now. So get ready for the most outrageous coming of age love story about growing up and blowing up. Spontaneous. When high school students start spontaneously combusting, Mara and Dylan struggle to survive in a world where each moment might be their last. An unexpected romance blossoms between them, and Mara and Dylan discover that when tomorrow is no longer promised, they can finally start living for today. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun little gem, a diamond in the rough, if you will. It's based on a popular young adult novel, and Spontaneous stars Catherine Langford from 13 Reasons Why, Charlie Plummer, Hatley Law, and it's now on video on demand again. And if you want to win a digital copy, because if you didn't listen to last week's episode, we got approval for this a little bit late. So some people that listened to the episode immediately, which thank you guys for always doing that, might not have heard it. You can win a digital copy. We extended it an extra week to make sure everybody heard this ad. But if you want to win one of several digital copies of the film that we're giving away, just send an email to spontaneous@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's spontaneous@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line, I'm ready to explode. And then include your name and you'll be entered to win. You can also share the Hollywood Outsider episodes, any episode or the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com on social media, and make sure to tag Buy Popcorn on Twitter. That's @BuyPopcorn on Twitter, or tag The Hollywood Outsider, our Facebook page on Facebook, and you can be entered that way as well. And what'll happen is we will announce the winners on our October 21st episode. We also will have a new giveaway for a new Dylan O'Brien movie, so you don't want to miss that episode as well. And we'll get the codes out to those winners as soon as we announce them. So remember, watch Spontaneous. It's on video on demand right now. I reviewed it last week. I told you it was fun as hell, and people just blow up randomly. It's hilarious and also a little heartwarming. So be sure to check that out. I called it basically a fun as hell Heathers for the modern age, and I stand by that. Again, if you want to win a copy, spontaneous@thehollywoodoutsider.com or tag us on social media. Thank you, guys. Now let's get into our topic. Bad TV couples, classic movie monsters, and the perfect summer movie soundtrack, which that playlist is on Spotify, so you can look it up. Let's get into it and start with bad TV couples. All right, our From the Outside In topic this week is bad TV couples. I almost said something completely different. Bad TV couples. Anybody who loves television has a favorite couple, maybe several favorites. We all love them. Have you ever had a show that you love, though, and two characters got together and it ruined it for you?
Yes.
Do tell.
Twice. The first one was Bones, and I liked the two characters, and I liked the show, and then they got together, and I stopped watching the show because I was done.
Didn't they end up getting married or something?
So that pretty much happened to me, too. Like, as soon as the two Bones characters got together, I was like, well, I'm done with this show.
It just kind of took all the appeal out of their cat and mouse to me. And that's the same thing with my second example. But I continued to watch the show. I didn't give up on this one. And that's because it has Nathan Fillion. And that is Castle.
Yeah, that one was so much more fun when they were maybe will they or won't they. And then they did. And then I was just like, eh. And plus, you knew they hated each other behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That was one of those ones when as soon as they started to get together, I think I made it two or three episodes into the relationship and I was like, well, this is boring now.
Mm-hmm.
And all the magic of the show was still there. It's just that one element really just changed the direction of it for me.
It derailed the show. And I don't know, because I know there was a lot of drama between the two. Mm-hmm. Well, supposedly.
No, there was. We talked to the showrunners, remember? And I'm telling you, they had their summer show. Oh, what was the name of it? We had them on here for an interview, and we talked to them. And let's just say they alluded to that was accurate. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But to me, it was when that maybe the romantic coupling of their characters really started to derail things behind the scenes, too, because now you're putting these two characters in like a different proximity to each other on a regular basis. Like that whole dynamic changed. And that's one of my problems with these relationships is you have to make a decision early on how you want this to go. Do you want this to be like a fun, flirtatious thing where these two people still see others, but they have this great relationship as friends and colleagues, but they never cross that line. But we enjoy watching them kind of like teeter to the line, but they never do it. Or do you want them to full on couple? Because very few have ever succeeded. And I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of the few that I can recall where they made a shift far into the show between characters, and these two examples just couldn't pull it off for me.
You know, part of the reason why it doesn't work for me is that when you see the coupling happening, it changes. The writers get lazy and they start changing the characters themselves, or fundamentally changing the characters themselves. And they'll start putting them in situations like, you know, the guy who never really had any people interested in him all of a sudden has all these people interested in him. And so he might accidentally kiss some other girl. And it's like, wait a minute. We just spent the last 3-4 years watching you pine and respect everything about this person. Now that somebody else is showing you interest, you change at a drop of a dime like that. Like, these are things to me that I find hard to believe, and I get annoyed when writers do it.
Yeah, well, I had one of my favorite shows of the 90s was The X-Files. Like, I absolutely adore that show, and I know a lot of people really wanted Mulder and Scully to get together, but you know why I love their partnership is because they, for the longest time, they didn't come across as a romantic couple. I don't care how much people wanted them to get together. If you really watched those episodes before they started making the bad call of making them lovers, they were a man and a woman who could actually be opposite sexes and actually have a platonic relationship where they loved each other deeply. They would do anything for it. They were just friends. It was wonderful because TV didn't have that. These partners you can rely on, because TV always devolves into this need to make everybody a couple just because the fans want it. And whenever the fans want it and they get it, it never works that way. It just doesn't work well. And to me, it kind of ruined the show in a way. Now, granted, I still like the resurgence. I like the movies, and then they're in a relationship in that. But whenever they bring up the relationship part of it, it just stops working for me. And it really, really, really hurt my love for the X-Files, because they made it part of the show when it didn't need to be. The reason I love the X-Files is because of their relationship. They would do anything for each other without being romantically involved, without doing it, without having a Superman baby. You know, all that stuff is why I love that show, and they ruined it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, one show that that both worked and didn't work for me was Psych. Like, initially, when Sean and Juliet got together, that stopped working for me, because you can tell that they're trying to set it up for Sean screwing everything up and Sean being Sean, which is fine because it's actually part of his character, and him screwing things up is actually part of the character. I just didn't want to see it happen because it was like this big shining light in the sky of here's what's going to happen next.
Ruined that whole season too, when he comes out and says, hey, you know, this was when he has to be truthful to her. That whole season was ruined because all it became for the next 5 or 6 episodes was him and Juliet. And they just forgot, like, Gus and Sean are why people watch this show.
Right. Absolutely. And then once they put them back together again, that's when the show got good again.
Because as much as people were, like, fine with them having a relationship and they were shipping them and all that other jive, to me, the most romantic couple of Psych is Sean and Gus.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody's going to get together. I'd rather those two did. I didn't care. But Sherry Thomas in her Facebook group, she agreed with me that the worst example of this is probably the one that most people refer to, and that apparently studios still haven't learned from, which is Moonlighting and Maddie and David. Mm. They had that back and forth. It was some of the most wonderful chemistry I've ever seen in television. And you just felt the passion and the sparks and the everything between those two, and they had to put them together and completely destroyed that show. That was my favorite TV show in the world until they got together, and it never recovered from it. Never. They never got that spark back.
That's a good one.
Very disappointing. Are there shows where you just dread any potential romantic couplings? Like, it just doesn't belong in these kinds of shows or those specific shows, John?
Yeah, you know, there's two of them that I'm thinking about right now that I really hope there's no romantic coupling happening, because part of the joy of them is the will they won't they, and I want them to either find a way to make it keep going or to eventually just shoot it in the foot. And that's the first one that comes to mind is Maeve and Otis from Sex Education. Mm. I don't want those two to get together, as much as every part of the story wants them to, and I'm sure a lot of other fans want them to. I'm really glad they're not together right now, because that is part of the magic of the show at the moment, is them not being together. And it really, fundamentally, those two characters should not work as a couple. And anyone who wants to argue that can fight me on it.
I'm going to agree with you. I do think that they would make a cute couple in a way. And I ship them and I want them to be together. But that's also part of the joy and the magic, like you're saying, is them not being together. And we want them to, but just things don't work out that way. And they're going to have to continue on their journey and hopefully just become really close friends. And that's what I'm hoping for. So I would agree with that. Mine kind of goes back to what Aaron was saying with X-Files. Anytime there's a show that tries to honor the boundaries of friendships, like, if you cross that bridge, if you decide to do that, there's no coming back, and you've changed the entire dynamic and of the relationships and the purpose of the show when you do that. When you decide, okay, I'm going to start off this show with these two individuals who are friends, and we're showing this relationship of friendship, and then we're going to decide to make them a couple down the line or make them interested in each other, you've changed the entire point. The point was for you to showcase meaningful opposite sex relationships, or, you know, if it's homosexual individuals and they would naturally be attracted to each other, but they're just friends. You've now changed that entire dynamic and ruined all of the past relationship building up to that moment, because now it feels like everything we built up to here was a lie.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. In fact, I'll take it a step further. Maybe this makes me sound like a very sad person. I don't want love in almost any show. I just don't want it. I don't care. You know, I don't watch TV for romantic stories. I watch it for dragons and crime and violence and profanity. I don't need a love story. It's just not something. Now, granted, I realize that's just me, but I don't want it. And then when you have it and you kind of cram it in there, it's just like Dexter and anyone but Rita, anyone after Rita. I just don't like it. I just, ugh. He had the romance. It obviously wasn't meant to be. He doesn't need any more. I realize you're trying to hit all the quadrants or whatever, but sometimes it doesn't fit a show. Stranger Things. I don't need anyone else falling in love with Eleven. I can totally see them doing that just because they feel like they have to. Procedural right. shows. Law and Order. Hawaii Five-O. CSI. All those kinds of shows. I just want characters and crime solving. I don't need them to have great lives. I just, guess what? I don't think they're real people. So I just don't care. I want them to solve a crime, have some action scenes, have some playful banter, and go back to things. I just don't need love all the time.
To your credit, one of the best non-romantic couples on TV were Benson and Stabler on SVU.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. And Steve and Danny on Hawaii Five-O, because I'm convinced they love each other in all the wrong ways. But they've never gotten together. So, I mean, they have a great platonic relationship. I don't care.
I also think writers need to take into consideration. So they're obviously going to decide, okay, we want to bring these two individuals together, even if that was their original game plan, introducing new characters. If you're not mapping out the actual chemistry of the actors and determining that as part of your execution on this romance, you should be evaluating that. And if those two characters don't work, you either need to find a new actor who has chemistry with the one you want them to have chemistry with, or you need to scrap that idea and work up something new. I'm on a different level. I like having romance in my TV shows. I'm fine with it. There are certain ones where we can leave it out, but I want them to establish the relationships and work through that dynamic going forward. I don't like the shifty dynamic where, okay, we're going to pretend like you guys are just friends, and then, oh, all of a sudden we're together, and then, oh my gosh, all of a sudden now I'm going to cheat on you with somebody else, and oh, the drama. No.
That's every CW show, by the way, just so you know.
Okay, well, clarify. I love those shows. But one example I was going to say is...
It's like the 100 relationships is what they start calling that show.
Murtaugh's marriage is how you can show, from Lethal Weapon, is how you can show issues that come up in relationships that aren't about having an affair.
Yeah, I agree with that. That was a great, healthy marriage, healthy relationship. You can do that more.
Real problems.
Yeah, and a lot of shows do that. I mean, just don't do it often. Like, I don't need it all the time. Law and Order, I love Law and Order. You know why? Because there's no relationship until they started adding relationship. Oh, we're going to give Benson like all this private drama. Ugh, I hate those episodes. I don't care. And I love her character. I think she does a fantastic job. She deserves every Emmy she's got. I don't care about her personal life. I don't watch Law and Order for feelings. I just don't. I do that. I watch those shows to get away from feelings. I don't want to feel for an hour. I don't want to see their, you know, to me, relationships works better in movies, I guess, because it's more compact. I don't have to deal with it 22 hours. You want
that rip from the headline story.
What's that?
You want that rip from the headline story.
Exactly. Not rip from the headlines. Oh, plus I got this dating problem and, you know, it's not working out. And I got this kid issue now. I don't care.
This kid that I stole from somebody.
Right. And so many shows just add random relationship drama for no reason. What was the show? This was funny. What was the show? It just came. Deputy. Anybody, either one of you seen that show, Deputy?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
It's on Fox, on Hulu, if you really want to watch it. It's not a bad show. Stephen Dorff is like this hee-haw cowboy sheriff who ends up becoming a deputy because of some ridiculous law. But there's one of his sheriffs that work for him that him and his wife have been trying to have kids, right? Okay. You with me so far? And yeah. So they go into this drug house and they end up killing this drug lord in front of his kids. Then they take those kids and they become their foster parents. And now they're in the process of trying to adopt those kids. Let me reiterate. They killed their dad literally in front of them. And now they have somehow, apparently, you know, the deputy pulled some favors. That's a hell of a favor. And have the kids living with them, possibly to adopt them, so they can have all this manufactured drama for their relationship and everything else. And I'm just like, none of that makes any kind of sense in the world. That's trying too hard to make relationship drama on a TV show.
Forget that.
Yeah. And there's one scene where he tells the kid, someday when you grow up, you might want to take me out and I'll understand. I'm like, yeah, he should do it tomorrow. You make him, you're making him live with you after you killed his dad. You son of a bitch. What kind of
nightmare fuel is that?
What kind of sadistic son of a bitch are you? God. All right. What are your three worst TV couples you've ever experienced? The three worst, Amanda.
All in one time?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so my first is from Parks and Rec, Tom and Anne. Oh my gosh, I just slaughtered that.
I don't even know who they are, and I know you got it wrong.
Tom and Anne. They just had no... This is Rashida Jones' character and Aziz Ansari.
Oh, that just sounds like a bad mix, really.
It was just... I understand why they initially brought them in, and that would have been fine, because then they broke up and it was like, okay, this is just not going to work. But then they kept going back to that. And it was horrible. Just let it die. Nobody wants this. Nobody asked for it. Nobody needs it.
You know, what's interesting is I actually enjoyed the relationship they had. Well, it only lasted for like three or four episodes. It wasn't even that big of a deal, but it really played on the fact that Tom Haverford was just a joke of a cartoon character, and it was really cool to see a character like Anne, like, instead of putting up with BS from a moron character just because she could, like she did with Andy when she had Andy, she nipped a lot of the stuff in the bud. So as far as like showing somebody be in a relationship that she wasn't 100% in and giving her the ability of walking out of it. Yeah, I think I'll buy it. I'm all for it.
Ugh. Ugh. Okay. I mean, I'll give you that it's your feelings, but I just hard pass. Second one, and this one I'm wondering if Aaron will relate to, if he'll agree or not. Spike and Harmony from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I hated their relationship.
Ugh, it was just gross and annoying and awful. And you could tell that nobody really wanted to be there. Like the characters, Harmony can get really attached in general.
She's
so that,
really
okay,
annoying.
Fine.
She's so annoying.
She's
I never liked her.
So annoying. Yeah. But Spike was annoyed with her. Mm-hmm. And yet they were still together. I couldn't buy it. I couldn't buy that he was willing to be part of that. When his entire character is built on the foundation of, I'm not doing anything I don't want to.
He was lonely. It was after, was it Darla? Is that her name?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
After Darla, enduring his huge crush on Buffy.
It was a weird time for him. But it still.
It was a weird time.
Never worked.
I like your choice. I'm going to up your ante on it when it gets to my turn. Mm. But I like your choice.
Ooh.
I'm fascinated.
Okay. And my last one is Veronica and Piz from Veronica Mars.
Yeah, he sucked. He's the lamest guy. Like, they put him in the movie, and I'm like, ugh, why?
He's just boring, and he's not compatible with Veronica at all. Like, he was nice to her and everything, cool, whatever, great. Mm-hmm. But they extended that relationship far past the expiration date.
You know what would have been cool with his character? If they would have blew him up in a car bomb or something.
Oh, my God.
I think that could have been great.
Oh, boy. Just a quick question. Are you Team Logan?
No. I never liked Logan. I thought they had a very toxic relationship, so I never saw the point. I like Logan a lot as a character. I hated him with Veronica.
Mm.
Always did. Always will.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, she was always the detective. You know, she was always the hard-nosed PI. I felt like she was better served on her own. She didn't need a boyfriend. That's one of those characters where I don't need a relationship. Stop trying to force one on me. I don't need it. It's not why I watch the show. I don't watch it. It's not Veronica / Logan Mars, you know?
Well, not no more.
All right, John, you or me? You choose.
You know what? Let me go because I already teased the fact that I'm up the ante on
yeah, now I'm Spike excited. And
Harmony. So my up on the ante, just to get it out of the way, is Spike and Buffy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I knew this one was going to happen.
Horrible, horrible relationship.
Let's just tell you that like, he raped her.
Yep.
That's it. What do I also have to say? Why does this even work? Why do they even have a show about her being? I know. No, 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 no. That was the, oh God. I mean, I like Spike a lot. He's actually the James Marsters actually reads all the Dresden novels on Audible. And so I have a loving relationship with him. And I like Spike because he was great when he showed up in Angel, even though I was like, wow, two vampires and they both have souls. I don't know what to happen anymore, but like, why?
Yeah, I wasn't big on their relationship when it first started, but then I was like, okay, can start to buy in it because he actually seems to care about her, and then he raped her, and I was like, this is just, the sexual assault piece is just not, that's not excusable to me. I can't buy that relationship anymore.
Forget that, people. All right, so my next one is Jack and Kate from Lost.
Ooh.
Wow. I'm laughing preemptively. You'll see later.
All right. So I like Jack as a character and I like Kate as a character. I don't like Jack and Kate together because number one, putting Jack and Kate in close proximity to each other, is a strong emphasis on how much out of his element Jack is, because Kate's just so much better at the whole being a badass thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, agreed.
And then, you know, you'd see her with Sawyer, and actually her and Sawyer made a whole lot more sense. And like just Jack and Kate from Lost, I can't deal. Like, number one, it was unfair to put her in a love triangle like that. But number two, just her outclassing Jack at every single turn and Jack being a mopey, I can't go back. It didn't work for me.
All right. Number three.
All right, so this one's interesting because this is not something. Well, I guess Lost, I didn't stop watching the show over, and this is another one where the relationship between these two characters was a tough on me, and that's Robin and Ted from How I Met Your Mother.
Oh,
I hated everything about this relationship. And on my second watch of the entire series, I realized why, which is because I got really tired of the will they, won't they, especially after they already have, and especially after Ted opened the relationship by cheating on a really good girlfriend that he had, who just happened to be living a couple countries away, learning how to bake cookies. Like, who cheats on a person learning how to bake cookies from Germany? I don't know, a moron. But I really did not like them getting together. Them together was not that great. And it's just a testament to how cute and adorable that show is, because I was able to stick it out even through the, I have feelings for Robin, I have feelings for Ted, but you guys are terrible together. I know we're terrible together. You guys shouldn't get together. No, we shouldn't. Why are we still talking about this 7 seasons in? That whole problem.
I never watched it, but you're passionate. So yeah, I hate that. Man, that's a bad couple. I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, they just, I would agree with you. It just felt like at some point it became a little bit forced. And you're passionate about the cookies, and I feel like that makes a strong argument for a case.
Look, a chick goes to move to Germany to learn how to make cookies and donuts and stuff from real chocolate, from German stuff. I am there for it. I'll sit there. I'll be waiting at the airport with every single flower and anything I can to be like, you're back. Can I have cookies now?
You know, fun side story, when I was a teenager, I went to prom with a German exchange student. I went on a couple of dates with her too. Wonderful girl. And I learned that the German people do not like Nazi jokes. Just letting you know.
Oh, boy.
Fun fact. When you... yeah, fun. I'll just leave it at that. they don't like them. It's not good. All right, so my three... I will start with two I've already mentioned, actually. Maddie and David from Moonlighting. Talked about them already. Mulder and Scully from The X-Files. It just makes me mad because I can't even tell you. Those are two shows I worshipped. And both times, them getting together took me out of my favorite shows. Just made them less of my favorites. And it really just broke my heart in many ways.
To real quick add to that, I just started rewatching X-Files recently, mm-hmm. and Yeah, I just, now that I look back on it, I'm like, their relationship was so good with the dynamic that they started with.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was perfect that way.
They were true partners in every sense. And whenever she was hurt or she was threatened, he was there for her and vice versa. And it was just like,
it was like brother sister.
To me, very much so. And she had a very scientific way of going about things. He had a very spiritual way of going about things. And they would always talk about things and come to conclusions based on where they came from and try to see the other person's side. It was like a very healthy relationship in the most unhealthy scenario. And then they just destroyed it. Because we got to get them together because TV, that's what we do. Now, my third one, John, is Kate and Sawyer from Lost.
What? I saw that coming.
I hate Kate and Sawyer. I didn't really love Kate and Jack, so it's not like I'm making an argument for them. I actually thought they always took away from her character when she didn't deserve that. They really did her character a disservice throughout that show, because they kept making one of the strongest characters on television all about her boyfriend or who her boyfriend was, right, or wasn't. And I really hated that aspect of it, which no Lost devotee ever wants to mention. They always want to skip over that. Oh, it was a very progressive and deep shit. Bullshit. Go rewatch that show. They make her into a puppet for half the series. It's just, it's not cool. But her and Sawyer were awful. Never. Look, I love Sawyer. Coolest hair on TV for years. Like he took over for Don Johnson from the 80s, man. He just best hair on TV. But that relationship made me laugh and laugh. What was it? The season when they were in the cages together or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And didn't they hump in the cages or something like that? I just,
yep.
I laughed out loud when they finally got together. I was watching it and I just burst out laughing, because to me, there's just nothing about them that had chemistry. Just nothing worked. I mean, at least Jack, I kind of got the vibe like Jack just wouldn't stop begging for her. And she finally's like, fine, we'll make out. But Sawyer and Kate were supposed to be this natural magnetic animal attraction. And man, no, both, if they were animals, they should have been put down, because they sucked. They were just neutered.
You know, anecdotally, I use Sawyer as my argument as to why I should get my first high def TV, my 52 inch.
I'm curious where this is going.
So At the time I had a plasma, a 37 inch plasma, or I think it was, yeah, 37 inch or 42 inch plasma, and it was only a 720p, and the new season was about to happen. It was right around time for the Super Bowl, and I looked at my wife and I said, hey, you know what you would really appreciate? And I'm like, and she goes, what's that? I go, what if you were able to, on a much larger screen, see every single bit of glistening sweat off of Sawyer every time he came out of that water on the beach? And she looked over at me and she goes, all right, fine, you win.
Well, whatever gets you the TV, man. I'm all about
right.
that.
Right. I know how to sell things.
I will say that I thought Kate and Sawyer had chemistry. But I also felt like it was like the negative chemistry. Like, that's the toxic relationship that you don't want to be part of, or you shouldn't want to be part of. But I agree 100% with your thoughts on the way her character was represented, and that her focal point was less about her and just about the relationships, her triangle, and these two men kind of like having this beef between each other because of a woman that they both desire. And it was like, come on.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. Wolfman, Dracula, Invisible Man without the flower, Creature from the Black Lagoon, etc. Obviously, these are monsters that are more the black and white era, or the before the 50s, before the 60s kind of era. But we're going to talk about all monsters too, in a way, because I want to know, first off, who was the first movie monster that truly scared you of all time?
Well, I still have this memory like written in my memory with indelible ink, but I remember one Halloween where, and this was back when I still lived in Panama, and my brother and I were watching the scary monster movies, and the first thing that came up was Wolfman. And we watched Wolfman, and I was just like, oh my God, that was so cool. And I just loved the original Wolfman. And then after that, they played American Werewolf in London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to back Wolfman creature features. And I was just enjoying this whole idea of somebody who transforms into a monster. You know, I really, really get into it. And then this freaking crazy ass Panamanians ran a special about how there were wolfmen in Panama. And I peed myself because all of a sudden, like, they were using footage from both movies, and they were talking about this whole thing, how it was a real thing, and how there's really, like, wolfmen jumping out and killing people and doing all this stuff. I had to go to bed. Because I couldn't take it anymore, because, like, my little brain was convinced that this was a real thing. It turned out to be a fake newscast that they put together as part of the Halloween feature, but still, my brain couldn't take it.
That's great. I'm going to come back to the Wolfman, because that's actually part of what I'm going to talk about later. But I loved what he did there. Lon Chaney Jr., right? He was just wonderful in that role. Amanda, what about you? What was the first movie monster that scared you?
None of them have scared me, honestly. And I was trying to wrap my head around the different ones that I've seen even more recently. And the only thing that I could come up with was one that felt like it had the most potential to actually happen. And that was Ginger Snaps, and I don't know why I felt like that could actually happen. I don't know if it was just the age of the girls or what it was, but I was like, oh, sure, we can turn into werewolves if this just happens, if we go out in the woods at the wrong time. And so I just haven't had that experience, though, and I've talked about this before. I'm not one who gets scared by movies in general very often, and classic movie monsters are certainly not the ones that do it for me. It typically falls more into paranormal. So
would you consider, like, Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers, those kind of guys, would they be considered movie monsters? I would say probably.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. I guess they would count. So then the only one that scared me was Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street. And that one scared me for many, many years until I saw the remake. And then I apparently snapped out of it because that was so bad. And I realized there's nothing to be scared of. I do have this one nightmare that happened. I was never scared of Scream. It's actually still one of my favorite movies. But I had this weird nightmare after I watched it, I think maybe on, like, repeat one night. And I went to bed and I had this dream that there was, like, 12 of these ghost face killers that came into my bedroom, and I was sleeping on the top bunk in my bedroom that night, and they were in my dream. I was also sleeping in the top bunk. So it was one of those dreams where I wasn't scared of that monster in the movie, but the dream just kind of wigged me out, where I was like, oh my God, especially because it was like I was dreaming about where I actually was. You know what I mean? Have you guys had dreams like that?
I never really have nightmares. And if I do, I just kind of end up hanging out with them. Like Jason Voorhees chases me, and then we just go have a beer. It's just the weirdest thing. So I don't have many of them.
That is weird.
I think I just want to hang out with Jason Voorhees. Like, why do you do what you do? I don't understand.
And he's all like,
he's like, why in Freddy versus Jason were you afraid of water all of a sudden? Can we elaborate on that? And he's like,
he drinks a glass of water.
He gargles it. What's up, guys? The first one, okay, this is kind of embarrassing, but did you guys ever see the movie Them? Am I the only one that saw it? The giant
ant movie? I've seen
it. Oh my God, that movie terrified me. It's either that or Jaws. I can't remember which one came first. I really can't, but I'm going to go with Them because that was on TV, so I'm almost certain I saw that one before Jaws, but who knows? But everybody knows that Jaws is great, so let me talk about Them. It's this old black and white movie where these ants were near a radioactive cloud, like everything was back in the 50s and 60s, and they became huge. And when you saw them on screen, if you watch them now, I have no idea what I was scared about. Like, legitimately, it looks like somebody just took one of those, ties, like garbage bag ties, and just made little ants and just had them chasing people in the sand on the beach, and they just had the camera really close. It just, it, obviously they're fake. But for whatever reason, when I was a kid, they terrified the hell out of me. I was petrified of ants, giant ants. And every time I would see ants, I've said this before, I would step on every damn one of them. Just all of them. I didn't care. And just in case the bomb came, I wanted to be safe. Take out as many colonies as I could. It caused problems.
That's obviously a traumatic experience for you, but very weird.
Right.
It felt like it. I even tried the magnifying glass thing. Remember that, John, when we were kids? Take the magnifying glass, burn
them.
Yeah. Yeah. I did whatever I could.
Ants smell funny when you burn them. I mean, not that I know or anything. No ants were harmed in the making of this podcast.
No, they were harmed a long time ago. All right, so to the classics, Manny, you kind of already answered this. Do they ever scare you? But did you watch many classic? Now we're on to the classics. Did you watch many classic monster movies?
I've watched much more Dracula, Nosferatu, and Frankenstein than any others, but I have seen some of the King Kong and Godzillas, and mostly from the contribution standpoint for those ones. And for interest for like Dracula, Nosferatu, Frankenstein. And I've seen a lot of the different iterations. Part of that was like, it started with requirements for film in college. And then it was like, okay, these are actually really good. Some of them are really great, reading the books and then kind of delving into that world from there. So definitely much more on that side than where Johnny probably is on the King Kong and Godzilla side.
Well, let me ask you before we move on to Kong, because I'm sure that's what John will talk about for 12 to 15 minutes. Nosferatu is a silent movie that deserves mention, and you brought it up, because I love Nosferatu. I just think it was very terrifying in its simplicity. I don't like silent movies at all, for the most part, but I guess at all for the most part. Those two things probably don't connect. I don't like them for the most part. For whatever reason, I just love that performance. It's a very haunting film, and the monster is very, I think it's Max Schreck, if I remember right. It was just vile and despicable. Did you still, because you obviously came into it much later than I would have, did you find him as captivating and haunting now, or whenever you saw this movie, as I did when I was a kid?
Yeah, and I mean, part of that stems from when you're in an environment, like watching it by yourself, I think makes it harder, especially when you're older and you don't have somebody guiding you through, you know, why, what is significant about this? What makes a good performance, or what makes this stand out, or keeping your attention? But when you're in a school environment where everybody's kind of collaborating and talking about what stands out to them, and you have the instructor who's obviously leading the class and talking about some of those things, it opens your eyes a bit more to wanting to engage with that film. So I was able to, probably more so than I would have on my own, and this, I guess that might just be my own perspective, if I would have just watched it by myself and got into silent films and black and white films and classic films and all of that by myself, I probably would have had a harder time connecting with it than having a group of people that I talk to that all love movies and an instructor that has kind of more of that, I don't know, that industry knowledge sort of thing to talk about what makes it so special. And so It makes the movie more memorable, and it makes the experience more heightened, and you're able to appreciate it on a deeper level than you would have if you just did it by yourself.
John, did you ever see Nosferatu and the makeup and how that, I mean, that was really well done for its time.
Yeah, I watched Nosferatu, and I did really enjoy that movie, even if it was a silent movie. And again, like you, I don't really feel akin to silent movies very much, because they're like, here, read these. Now see this picture. Now read this. Now you see this picture. Though I really enjoy the making of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
The movie, I don't know how much of it was fictionalized or how much of it was when they showed the Eddie Izzard and everybody did that movie that was about making that movie.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie, and they, you know, I don't know how much it was fictionalized, but they talk about how Max Schreck really just sat in that character, and you know, they found him someplace to play the role, and he, you know, and they had a whole lot of different things happening on set that they weren't aware that was supposed to be happening, or weren't aware that was going to happen, and people got hurt making that movie because Max Schreck was crazy.
He seems crazy. Like, the entire movie, I was convinced that there was a real dude like that. I'm like, did they just go to the circus? Because back then, you know, the carnivals were a thing. They were a big thing. They just go round somebody up that just looked like a freak and brought him back here and said, chase people. Because that's what it felt like.
That's essentially what they did. Essentially, according to that movie, as far as when they tell that story, that's essentially what they did.
Oh, that's even scarier.
And I'm like that.
He was trying to kill me.
The way the makeup effects for the character, for Nosferatu, for his
the
character.
Count.
Yes, yeah. The Count. In that movie, though, in particular, more so than, I would say, probably any other vampire iteration. And it just, for whatever reason, and I don't know how it's possible, it is the epitome of what you fear from a vampire. Like, it's despicable, and it's uncomfortable, and it's mm-hmm. ugly, and it's fearful, and it's the creeping, and it's the shadows, and there's so much to it that makes you uneasy, and no words have to be spoken, which makes it even more uncomfortable, because now you're sitting here, and there isn't that, and, you know, just so many different elements to it, but I feel like the makeup was so, A, out of its time, but even now, if I watched that, because I've watched it more than just one time, it's still something where I can come back to it and be like, gah, don't like it. It's creepy, but it's great because it's creepy.
Yeah, and I mean, Bela Lugosi was Dracula, right? Yeah. He was fantastic, and I take nothing away from his performance, but there's just his Dracula. You put him up, almost every vampire I've seen on screen up to Max Schreck, and I really think Max Schreck just owns it. There's just something about his performance that just feels very animalistic and just savage.
Well, he feels more like a predator.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. Much more like a predator. He's not trying to be sexy. He's not trying to be cool. There's no, hey, I'm coming to suck your blood. There's none of that. It's just, I'm going to eat your face and I'm hungry.
Right.
There's no reasoning with a character like that. But at the same, in the same respect, like I get what you're saying and I can appreciate that and I agree with it. I also think that there's a very distinct difference between Lugosi's Dracula and Nosferatu's Schreck or whatever his last name is, his Count, because
Nosferatu Schreck, he was played by Schreck.
That's not what I meant to say. Mixing up a lot of words here.
Mike Myers did the voice.
But in Nosferatu, that is supposed to be a character that is animalistic and it is predatory, like John already said. But Dracula, Lugosi's character, that is more of the creep factor from Bram Stoker's Dracula, where it's a sophisticated and suave character that has like this charismatic prowess for manipulation. And that alone is uncomfortable because that is real, that's relatable, that's something that you could actually believe and see happening. And it's something where it's, yes, it can be sexy, I guess, but it's more just the charisma that Lugosi had and that character where he is going to suck your blood, but you're going to want him to. And so there's like that weird appeal to that character. Like, yes, it is sexual. It's sexy. That is all there.
Definitely.
There is
get in
that.
There, man. Let's do it.
There's that level to it. But that's what makes it uncomfortable, is that you could see a realm where you might actually be willing. And that's more terrifying than having somebody come and take that from you. To me, at least. And so that's why, like, Dracula, Lugosi's Dracula is my favorite, because of that aspect to it.
See, it's so funny. They always have guy vampires that are very suave, and they say these cool things, and they make very cool movements, because guys are very simple. Just have a hot vampire, and we're like, all right, we'll get in the car. That's literally it.
That reminds me of an older Jim Carrey movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What was it? Once bitten.
Well, there is one, and I can't remember which one it is, but there's like an orgy that he's having in this movie. It's just like him and three other women or whatever, and he's just like, I'm here.
What's
so?
That's Bram Stoker's, isn't it?
I think it is.
It's in the name. All right, John. What did you grow up? We know Godzilla, but like, let's say of the other classic monster movies, or you could speak to Godzilla too, but what classic monster movies did you grow up on?
I watched a lot of them. I love genre flicks. So when it came to what I could get my hands on, there was a lot of different Draculas involved, and there was a lot of different mummies or whatever. And, you know, the Creatures from the Black Lagoon, anything that was a monster movie, I was into, because, you know, just like anybody else, I occasionally want someone to try to scare me. I want to feel that excitement. And at that time, these movies had an awesome way of doing that without being flashy about it. They were able to let you sit in the moment. And this is back when we weren't, our bandwidth wasn't being taken up by a billion things. We had all the time in the world to let them take all the time in the world to scare us. And it was a good time.
You talked about the Wolfman, and that one scared me. I remember when I saw it, and I don't know why. I really believe it was because of the performance, because he was a very sad character. He wanted to be a good man. I mean, it's been a long time since I saw it, so you correct me if I'm wrong, but he wanted to be a good man. He was a very sad character, and it was really more about his plight, and he could never escape it. That was like, he just wanted to be out of this and done with it. And for whatever reason, that kind of scared me, because the idea that, no matter what, like, so many movies, you know, you can decide to be a bad guy. You can decide to be a good guy. You know, he had no decision in this whatsoever. He just knew he was going to kill people, and he didn't know how to make it stop. And I just found that to be so fascinating, sympathetic, and also terrifying when I was a kid.
Yeah. I really like the thinking behind that, because it's very true. It's just any sort of agency that he had was removed from him.
And there was something about, because back then, you're right, we didn't have the flashy. There was no special effects. It was all about performance. I remember watching, I don't know if either one of you has seen it, but the original Fly with Vincent Price. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Effects? Not great. I mean, it's basically just a giant fly helmet. But for whatever reason, it worked for me. I mean, I really, really got into that story. I wouldn't say it scared me, but I really got into that story. The ending actually terrifies me. The whole help me, that I find.
Oh, my God, Nate. Oh. And The Rock?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just terrifying, wasn't it? I mean, that was really well done.
Yeah. No, I mean, for the time, the special effects were pretty incredible, you know. But, yeah, sure, we look at it now and say, guy in a fuzzy helmet, you know. But for the time, like, we couldn't have asked for anything better. And they were, and that's why that you see such a great focus more on performances and a focus on storytelling than I think we have today, because there's just so much reliance on being flashy about it. Look, something shiny, and you know, we're all like, squirrel, you know. But back then, people weren't like that.
If you ever want to really know how big a change special effects plays, if you look at the remake of The Mummy versus the original Mummy, the original Mummy, that dude is slower than a turtle. It is the slowest horror villain in history. And they knew they couldn't do that again, because modern audiences would never buy that people would get killed by this thing. So they had to make it flashy and just cooler and everything else. But back then it really worked, because it wasn't so much of how fast he was or how jazzy the villain was. It was because you were terrified that this was a guy that was dead a while ago, and now he's back, and there's curses, and he's going to kill everybody. Oh my God, what are we going to do? Don't stay out of the museum. And people are still terrified to this day of King Tut and curses and nonsense because of that movie.
The Mummy is kind of the beginnings of what we have for like Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers, where there was, you have a villain that you didn't ever see them move very fast, but then in the case of the mummy, as soon as like somebody stumbled on the mummy, it'd be a scream and then cutscene.
Right.
You never actually saw what the mummy actually did to them. Whereas then you have Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees, which are pretty much the same kind of character, where you don't actually see them run after you or chase you down or run down somebody. You're trying to get away from nothing, and they're just walking the entire time, and boom, all of a sudden he's taking the secret tunnel and he's already popped up in front of you.
All right, so why do you think audiences then and now, whatever, love these classics when, like you said, they're far less dazzling or dramatic, they're not flashy? Why do you think people loved them back then, other than maybe that's all they could get?
I mean, saying that it's all they can get is a little easy, but it's also a lot about people's bandwidths today versus back then. Today we have phones, computers, jobs, family, this, that, TV, movies, everything is pulling at us every single direction to get our attention. And so whatever we get dealt to us has to be the flashiest thing possible. Back then, people just had, like, I don't know, TV dinners, Mad Men.
It's true.
But before Mad Men. So
they were Mad Men.
They really didn't have as much pulling them to in different directions. So, and people weren't so used to having everything shoved down their throat so quickly. So they had to sit in those quiet moments that the movies were giving them, and they were able to feel those feelings that they were trying to transmit over to them through time, through obscurance, and all these other things, tricks of the trade to scare people with. And you're able to really just sit. And I think that's why they're classics. And I think that's why today, when we find something that's great, it can hearken so much back to what movies did back then.
Since John touched on the then piece, I want to talk about why people would still like them now and why we can still appreciate them. There was no need to have special effects or the razzle dazzle, because you weren't reliant on the visual. You were reliant on the compelling nature of the story. You were reliant on the elements in it that had a level of symbology or some sort of representation that you could take back real world and actually be scared of it.
Leave it to the fan of Boondock Saints to use symbology in a sentence.
Symbolism. Damn you, Jonathan. No, I can't stand you, but you're also very right. So there's something from it. Like you were talking about where people are scared of something when it comes to the dead and being afraid of things with the mummy associated with that, or people are afraid to do something, create creatures because of Frankenstein. And there's so much of it that you can find a way to connect back to reality. Like Frankenstein, people aren't putting people together and making them, but we have AI now. Like that's terrifying to think that we have things that we're putting together, but we have no real control or understanding of, just like the story of Frankenstein is. And so there's all of these different things that you can appreciate, but not even to mention the actual effects in terms of makeup, that they had to be so innovative and creative to put something together that is still now in 2020, you know, like 100 years later, is still believable. And it's still, you know, to some people it might be terrifying. We talked about Count from Nosferatu and how great the makeup was there, and that was something from what, 1922 or whatever. Like we're talking something from literally almost 100 years ago still holds up today, and that is to me a testament of the films and the classics and why they hold up, because they were ahead of their time. Even if they're behind our current time, they still did something that was magnificent, and it was still something that could be culturally or, you know, worldly relevant to us.
If you think of the greatest horror monsters, aside from silent killers, because all they really do is just walk, they were so reliant on performances. They were successful because of what the actor did with the part. It wasn't shock and gore and effects. They didn't have that. So it was the actor. It was what they chose to do with it. Even in modern times, what Robert Englund did with Freddy Krueger is Amanda talked about it. When the remake came out, it doesn't work simply because the actor just didn't work was a big part of it. Now, some people will say he was fine, but he wasn't exceptional. And for whatever reason, Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, those guys, they had that something. They understood that that character had to be just a little bit something more, and they made it happen. And that's why I think they kind of have stood the test of time.
Yeah, and a lot of those stories in their ways are relatable. They're relatable in the sense that a man who's lost agency in his life, and, you know, Dracula, a man who's just fallen, you know, trying to find love in his life. And yeah, so, sure, he goes about it in scary ways, but hey, you know, everyone needs a cuddle, right? And then you have Frankenstein, which is something that didn't necessarily want to be here, but and is just learning how to deal with the world, and it can go either way, whether it be evil, be or be good, and yet it's just his life experiences that start to build him to be the way he is. And we can all see ourselves in these creatures much better than some hack and slash monster.
Right. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic, the perfect summer movie soundtrack. Before we get into it, I do kind of want to ask you guys, you know, it's typically summer movie season right now. We've started with some Marvel movie or some Fast and Furious franchise or something. Do you feel like your soul is lacking a little bit without the kickoff?
Yes. Yes. Emphatically. Yes. Like total. Yes. Like I can't say yes any more than yes.
Absolutely. And I feel like the last, I don't know, however many years Fast and the Furious movies have been coming out, but aside from
47,
Marvel,
47 years.
Aside from Marvel trying to take over the summer by starting it in April, Fast and the Furious was one of the big kickoff movies for the summer. Like that was the, for at least in the Midwest, the rain and snow has started to subside. You might see a little bit of sunshine, and Fast and the Furious comes to the theaters, and suddenly it's a really nice day outside, so you can drive your car and you hear everyone drive super crazy. Yes, I miss summer kickoff movies.
Yeah, man. Ever since Fast Five, like, you could, that just gets you in the mood to like, I'm going to hit the road.
Yeah.
Settle down with your Kia.
I wish my Kia could go that fast. I really do.
Oh, right. You actually drive a Kia. My bad.
Hey, I like Kia. Don't knock it. Don't knock it.
I love Kia.
No, actually, they've gotten to be, they actually made a really great car lately.
Yeah, I know. And by the way, this podcast was sponsored by Kia. All right. Well, instead of dwelling on all that, let's make our perfect playlist. Now, why do I transition to playlists? Well, because summer means music for a lot of people. That means you roll down the windows, you crank on your, do they still say tunes, the kids?
No.
No? What do they call them? Hot beats?
Jams. That's what it is. It's jams.
You know the stuff your great-grandmother used to give you.
Oh, she spread it on my toast. I remember that. She called it
Jock Jams 5. Let's get some Jock Jams 5 on there.
I remember those. Those were fun. All right. So what we're going to do is we're each making our perfect playlist. Now, this is meant to be our 10 songs for summer. Now, there's a lot of honorable mentions that we each had. We don't want the show to go 3 hours. So what we did is we crafted a Spotify playlist that is available. You can just find it. Go look for it. The Hollywood Outsider Perfect Summer Movie Soundtrack playlist. All of these songs are on there. So you don't have to write all of this down, as long as you have Spotify. If you don't, get a pen. Just find that playlist, The Hollywood Outsider. It's put on by me, so you can search my name probably.
You can, but we'll put it on the website page.
Yep, show notes. It's linked in the show notes, so you can find that. So all the songs are on there, but we're each picking 10 songs. They can be themes. They can be songs from a movie soundtrack or just synonymous with a movie. In our mind, when we hear them, it makes us feel like, yeah, this is summer. It takes us back. It does whatever it does. It just feels like a perfect summer song for us. And we're going to give that to you, that list to you, each of our 10 songs, as well as our listener 10 from the poll that we put in Facebook. And then we're going to give you our perfect summer movie soundtrack. This means that you could see yourself, windows down, hair flowing, driving or jogging or whatever, to this playlist. So bonus points if you guys do this and you actually know the chorus, okay?
What do we earn if with the bonus points?
Bonus points. You save them and eventually you turn them in at Chuck E. Cheese and you get
Hepatitis.
Oh my God.
All right. Amanda's going to go and take her playlist. Go ahead, Amanda.
All right. So these are not in any particular order except for the last five.
You have it on shuffle. It doesn't matter because it's going to continuously play the entire time you're running or jogging or driving your car. It's on shuffle. It doesn't matter. You have no control over it. Go!
Okay, so the first one is my favorite song of all time, Come On Eileen, which is by Dexy's Midnight Runners, and that can be found in the Perks of Being a Wallflower soundtrack.
Now, why does that make you think of a movie? Because if it's your all-time favorite song, did you always think of it, or is like that's really where it sold you?
That's where it sold me, because I had heard the song before, but I hadn't fully envisioned the moment of how it could feel until I watched the scene, which I had read in the book already. And in the scene that they play the song, she is actually standing through a truck and, you know, she's standing up through the top of it. And so she has her arms out. The wind is blowing. Like, it is just a very summer feel. It's nighttime in this scene, but that's, you can feel the wind when I hear the song. Like, that's what it reminds me of.
That's perfect.
Is then. Being in a car.
That's what you want. You want like something that makes you feel like summer.
I've literally in traffic when we're at a full stop, just like gotten out and done a little dance.
Come on.
I'm not ashamed.
Da, 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 da. And nobody knows the words outside of Come On, Eileen. I swear to God.
It's very sexual.
Well, it sounds, I mean, the title. Yeah.
Yeah. The next one is X Gonna Give It To You by DMX, which gained its popularity in Cradle to the Grave.
Yeah.
But has been
that movie sucked. Like,
but it's been in like every action movie since. Like Deadpool used it most recently, I think. So great song. Literally the first song that I play in my car with the windows down when it starts to get really nice outside and it feels like summer every single time.
Knock knock, open up your door. It's real.
Just don't sing too much of the song.
Sorry.
It's hard to bleep it out.
Here's how it was on. Bleep. Bleep, bleep, bleep. X got a bleep.
And then next I have The Kids Aren't All Right by The Offspring, which can be found on the Faculty soundtrack, which is a great soundtrack, a great band, and a great song.
Not a bad movie either. I will honestly tell you, like, Josh Hartnett is cool as hell in that movie.
I like the movie.
It's
I like it
movie.
A lot.
It's a good movie. It's one of the few good Robert Rodriguez movies. Yeah, I said it. I used to love the man. Don't hate me.
Used to.
He directed an episode of Mandalorian recently, so you have that to look forward to.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
More Baby Yoda hijinks I look forward to? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I guess he caps off somebody or, like, they put, what is it, Vicks on his eyelids to keep him asleep or something? Who knows?
What the hell are you talking about? All right, Amanda, keep going. So weird.
Yeah, this got weird and off track. So the next one, I'm sure everybody knows this song and can distinctly tie it to the film. Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve from Cruel Intentions.
Okay, I gotta stop you. The fact that you think everyone is gonna associate that song with Cruel Intentions is fascinating to me. You really think
Why?
The entire world is that big of a Cruel Intentions fan?
No, but I think when people hear that song, like, to me, it's synonymous with the film.
I get like, that.
I think of suicide mostly.
Okay. Dark.
Wow.
Real dark.
Wow.
Extra dark.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
I just don't know how popular Cruel Intentions was as a movie. I'm sure I'm not saying many people haven't seen it, but you're just like, everybody's going to associate it. And I don't know if that's the case.
No. Okay. So if you
that's
know
a great
the song,
John,
you're probably going to associate it to Cruel Intentions though.
Okay. Fair enough.
Maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just my age group that
your age group, you were like two when that movie came out. I don't want to hear your age group.
I was not two. You're so ridiculous.
Oh, for God's sake. It was the 90s. It was the angsty 90s.
It
I'm going to have
like
so
99.
Many...
Calm down.
You were five.
I was not five. I would have been six.
Oh, my
no.
God.
Yes, I would have been six. I had to count.
The fact that you had to count tells me you were still five.
The fact that you didn't count tells me you might still be.
Wow.
What?
What's next?
Did you just try to I'm rubber your glue me?
I think so. I think so.
Okay, so the next one is from Big Daddy, love this movie, so much great music. And I went with When I Grow Up from Garbage. And I know Aaron's a big Garbage fan as well.
Huge Garbage fan. I love,
love
Shirley Manson. Yes.
She's so wonderful. And she is a powerful performer. Man, she's so great.
I could listen to Garbage all day long. And I love when people say, oh, that's their name is like, because they're garbage. And like, uh-huh, yeah, their music's still good. So I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but cool.
Right? Jerk off, man. They're fantastic.
They probably have to a lot.
The next song is called Hero. It's by Chad Kroeger, which nobody likes him because he's a singer of Nickelback. But it was a great song, and I don't mind Nickelback as much. And it came from the Spider-Man soundtrack.
You know what? Unpopular opinion? I like Nickelback.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad.
I like Nickelback.
I like them too.
I love when people say that they suck. I'm like, they sold like a bazillion records. So somebody you know likes them. Somebody you care about, somebody you think highly of, likes Nickelback a lot.
Somebody that's going to take care of you when you're old and decrepit likes Nickelback.
Yeah, and that's a great song.
Photograph is going to be their wedding song.
No, but Hero's a great song. I'm a hero. Yeah, that's a great song.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Super good. I have another Spider-Man song, but it comes from the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse soundtrack, and it's called Invincible by Aminé. Not anime, Aminé.
Feels like
it's just like a.
They're trying to be clever.
A good hip hop song. No, it's a really good hip hop song. I like it. It kind of like gets me jazzed and.
Hippopotamus.
You give them all the easy ones. Okay, then I have Stranded by Plum, which was in Drive Me Crazy. And I don't care if you don't like that movie. I love it.
Can I just tell you, that song isn't on Spotify.
It's not?
It's only the karaoke version. It's still the same song, but they only have the karaoke version of it. They don't have the actual song. I think that's hysterical. But that's on the playlist, so check it out. Yeah.
You're going to have to put the words in yourself.
No, it's literally got the vocals and everything else, but I think
okay.
I don't think
gotcha.
It's the original band, but it's sung in the spirit of whatever the band's name was.
Really interesting. Yeah. Okay, I might have to listen to that or I might regret it. So the next one is Wannabe by Spice Girls from Spice World, because of course. But you want to know something? I had the hardest time narrowing down which song I was going to use from Spice World.
Oh, wow. There were more than one?
There was like the entire soundtrack. I listened to the entire soundtrack a lot. And so I have a hard time figuring out which one. So I went with the most popular one, the one that everybody knows and will sing. Yeah, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
I wonder how many times each of those ladies, as they've gone through life, somebody has come up to them at a grocery store or a mall signing or whatever the hell they do now and just went, tell me what you really, really want. I just want to know how many times it's happened to them in their lifetimes. That has to be
probably
exhausting.
Still.
Yeah, it's everyone except Posh Spice because, you know, she's got David Beckham, so she's already won the lottery.
Well, they're probably all just sitting there laughing while you're singing it to them, fanning themselves with the pound, like the $1 million pounds in their face, just fanning themselves with it. Yeah, go ahead, make fun of me. I don't freaking care.
Hey, they were supposed to go on tour this year with Backstreet Boys.
I wasn't saying it like as a negative. I just feel like that's what fans would do. And they just think they're being clever, and they're like, yeah, first time I've heard it. Good job, Stan.
Okay. So my last song on my top 10 is Seeing Red by Unwritten Law, which was in the movie Grind.
No, that's the one. That's the karaoke one. I'm sorry. That's the karaoke song. Because when I was making the playlist, that was the karaoke song. In the Spirit of Unwritten Law. That's right. That's the one they didn't have.
In the spirit?
That's how karaoke works. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, some of the tones are just off enough so that they can't get written up.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. I don't know that I want to hear that song in karaoke.
It sounded similar to the other one, but Grind, huh? Really, Grind.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, that movie is enjoyable for all the wrong reasons.
Have you not seen it, Aaron?
No, I have seen it. That's why I just...
Oh, you have.
Yeah,
okay.
I've never heard anybody be like, I love Grind. So that's why it was kind of cool. I'm like, yeah, it was kind of a cool movie. So
my brother and I watched it a tremendous amount of times, and we actually rewrote this song with our own very inappropriate lyrics that we still sing to each other to this day.
Very nice.
Gross.
So I have like not like sexual, but it was just inappropriate for this podcast because we want it to play in multiple countries.
It's called Seeing Red, so you equated it to like menstruating? What? I don't know.
No, no. But it's just a close personal song to me, and I love it. I can jam out to that at any time.
See, the kids do say jam. All right. And that's your 10?
That's my top 10.
All right, Jen, what's your 10?
Should I save honorable mentions?
We're not doing honorable mentions. The playlist is there.
Oh, playlist so, yeah. is honorable mentions.
Otherwise, we'd be here for another 4 hours, Amanda.
Okay. Well, right. I brought another 10, so.
Of course you did. We're not surprised. They're in the playlist.
All right. So when I think about awesome summer movie soundtracks, I think about movies that get me going, get me pumped, get me out in the road running and indoor driving with the windows down. So, yeah, I do think about all these things. And, like, and they're all going to be able to take me into a place mentally where I can just let my imagination roll, where I can try to get the creative juices flowing. So the very first song on my list is the main title from Godzilla, because of course it's on my list. It means that we're about to open up a can of whoop-ass on whatever project I got in front of me. You know, I love the way it starts. I love the way it's like, ba, 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 ba. And it's, you know, after that, it just starts building up the, you know, and it just gets, you know, faster and faster and faster until it really helps you pick up. Whenever I hear it, it gets me pumped. I love it. And that's why it's the first song I picked.
Okay.
And then, of course, following that up, I'm going to switch over to something a little bit different. And it's going to be from Transformers, the movie, Touch. Because you got the touch, bam, 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 bam. You got the power. Yeah.
You really sang it. I think you broke one of my headphones, but you
just
you
lost
got
the
it.
Six listeners. And I don't mean because they stopped listening, they just died.
They just they're just driving along and their poor heads exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, another song that just gets me pumped every time I hear it. It's so much fun.
That's a good one. That's a lot of nostalgia right there for a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Following that up, I have Molasses from done by Hans Zimmer and Batman Begins.
That's
ooh.
All of his music. You know what's weird? You could listen to the scores of all three of those films from start to finish and not be bored.
Right.
You know, it's great music.
And you're almost convinced you're listening to the same song, just different versions, like or different places of that same song.
Which is it's important. It feels like the character. You know what I mean? It just feels like Batman.
I genuinely feel like Hans Zimmer and John Williams, you could not find a bad score from that. All of them are perfection. And that's exactly why I could not include any scores in mine and had to go with actual songs, because I don't know how you narrowed that down, John.
Well, it was because it's the first song from the movie, I think. And
it was the first one that showed up when I Googled it. So I had to choose it.
Right. So, and then moving along from that, speaking of John Williams, I have Star Wars Episode I, The Duel of Fates, because, you know, with as iconic as the main theme of Star Wars is, I felt like Duel of Fates was something that became synonymous with Star Wars. You hear that chorus go off and you're like, that's Star Wars. And you can identify it wherever you go. And it's another thing that gets me pumped, that gets me excited. And it's one of the things that helps me love Star Wars a little bit for about 5 seconds. And it's May the 5th right now. So, I mean, yesterday was May the 4th and I had to include something Star Wars in this.
That one, right?
Yeah, that one.
Yep. That's a great instrumental. Absolutely.
Yeah. Moving right along into some other instrumentals from different movies. This one, yet another Disney property, Pirates of the Caribbean. He's a Pirate.
So good. That's the theme, right? It's like the theme.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like it because whenever I feel like I'm in an adventuring mood and I want to get those creative juices flowing for that, it helps me get into that frame of mind of like, of a pirate / you know, adventure / fantasy area. And they did a really good job creating it for that reason.
Good. I like it.
All right. So this is where my list gets a little bit different, because I'm going to get away from a lot of these instrumental pieces or soundtrack and get into something a little bit more fun and have something to it. So the first one I came up with was from So I've Married an Axe Murderer, and it's Saturday Night from the Bay City Rollers. But in that movie, it's done by somebody else. But that song, whenever I hear it, I don't know why, I start thinking about having fun, and it just has a nice beat to it. It's just Saturday Night. And it's just so much fun. And again, in the times of my life in which I'm taking the time to listen to music, I want something that takes me away, helps me stay positive, helps me stay fun. And that's what I think about when I think about the song.
And helps you, teaches you to spell. Ah, like the banana song.
Oh, look at that.
I like songs that teach people how to spell.
Banana?
No, she's not picking on John for his lack of
spelling.
Spelling. Or his creative sense of spelling. She's not picking on me for that. She's just
banana nana fofana papifa. So that's from
No, she's talking about the Gwen Stefani.
I know what she's talking about, but I'm older. So I wanna ask you, that's from So I Married an Axe Murderer?
Yeah.
Go upstairs and lay on your huge pillow.
Heat pants now.
It's so big, it's got its own weather system.
It's like Sputnik.
I love that. All right, what else you got?
All right, to follow that up, I'm going to switch it over to something a little bit different, and that's going to be from Suicide Squad, Without Me, from Eminem.
Oh.
I can do most of that song.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Eminem fan, but when he does stuff like this, I really get into it, and I really do enjoy that song for that reason.
I'm rocking the table while he's operating. You waited this long, stop debating. No, sorry.
All right. And then following that, I have Guardians of the Galaxy, Spirit in the Sky.
Great song.
The whole Guardians of the Galaxy movie soundtracks are so great.
Oh, it's really tough to pick a perfect one, but I think I went with that one just because, again, with what my theme of this Perfect Summer soundtrack is something that takes you from the beginning to an end, and that end starts to teeter off as far as impact. So it gives you the feeling of a big big peak, and it's got a wind down, and we're in the wind down at the moment. And speaking of wind down, you need that last little bit of a push to get you through that run, which is from Baby Driver, the song Bell Bottoms.
Ooh, yes, that's another good one.
That's a good one. I prefer, was it Hocus Pocus or whatever? I prefer that one, but that's a great soundtrack as a whole as well.
Oh yeah, like there's actually a playlist for that soundtrack, and in which Edgar Wright, I believe, went ahead and created an entire playlist. And the playlist is huge.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, it feels like it'd be a good running mix.
Oh, absolutely. It's really great. And then I'm going to finish off this run. Speaking of runs, I'm going to finish off this run with something that gets me into a very dreamy space, very wistful. And that's from the movie The Crow, It Can't Rain All the Time.
Oh, so good.
It's a beautiful song.
It absolutely is.
Haunting.
That soundtrack has a lot of good songs, too.
It's kind of like I had it when I first had it. I think I had it on cassette tape. And I remember maybe I think it was cassette tape, maybe a CD. I don't remember. But I remember like half of it is fantastic. And then the back half, I'm like, I can't wait till I get to Can't Rain All the Time, because the other ones were kind of sketchy there.
Yeah, there's definitely some going back and forth, but when I was trying to put this list together, I was like, oh, you know what other soundtrack this reminds me of? And it's Judgment Night. And but then I realized Judgment Night came out in October, so it doesn't count. Mm.
Judgment Night, that movie? Yeah, I don't know if you ever saw that movie. Dennis Leary, Emilio Estevez, very old. Did you ever see that movie, Judgment Night?
Yes.
That soundtrack was fantastic because it had where every song took two different bands and put them together to make something different. And it was just very unique. It was just a very cool album that nobody talked about because the movie didn't do great, but this is a really cool soundtrack.
That soundtrack was, I believe, the signs of the beginning of nu metal, where we started seeing, a lot of bands do that, that whole thing. But yeah, that was a fantastic soundtrack for that reason. Yep.
As a side note, if we were supposed to only choose films that released in summer, I may have not caught that part of the rules.
No, that wasn't necessarily part of the rules.
Oh, okay. Because John said it didn't count. And I was like, oh, no.
No, that wasn't one of the rules. Summer movie soundtrack, meaning the soundtrack is for the summer. It doesn't mean the movie had to come out in summer.
In the summer.
Yeah, oh. That you would play in the summer.
All right.
Okay.
I restricted myself massively.
Hey, if you've got some, you know what? When we're done, we're probably going to end up with like a few honorable mentions because Amanda won't stop. So if you got some more you want to throw out there, then just have them ready.
Well, I mean, my honorable mentions are easy. So we just hit one.
Okay. So here's my, is that 10? That was 10, right?
That was 10.
You're good. All right. So here's my playlist. It's pretty, I think if anybody knows me, you're going to know most of them. So first, Jim West, Desperado. He's a rough rider. He doesn't want nada. But Wild Wild West, I don't care what you thought about the movie. I enjoyed it. But I freaking love that song. I can listen to that song all day, every day, never doubt it. I love it. Love everything about it. Will Smith from the movie Wild Wild West. And I'm a big rap fan. I grew up surrounded by rap music. So you're going to see several rap songs on my list. Lose Yourself from Eminem, 8 Mile. Just a fantastic song. You know, a lot of these are stuff that I would crank down. I would roll down the windows, just crank it up and just drive around and I could just have a great time. That's one of those songs. It's also a great running song too, because the beat is very din, 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 din. It's a great running song. Blaze of Glory from John Bon Jovi was in yes. Young Guns 2, which is a wonderful soundtrack, by the way, because the whole thing is John Bon Jovi and he's very much writing every song to the movie. And there's just, I don't know what it is, but I have tried to karaoke that song so many times and I fail miserably. But John Bon Jovi, I just love it. I absolutely love it. Shut down! And just everything about it just sings to me. I love it. I love it. I love it. It makes me feel like summer's here.
Love Bon Jovi.
The Greatest Show from The Greatest Showman, which is, I guess, Hugh Jackman, but really it's whoever's on that track. It's just a fun toe-tapping, great song to play and drive around with and have people look in your windows and be like, really, is that grown-ass man listening to some musical stuff right now? And you go, yeah, yeah, he is. And you turn it up louder. It's that kind of song. I love it.
Are these real-life experiences?
Yeah, most of them are. The next one, I'll give you insight. So this is a song that got me in trouble in 1992, 91. I don't know. I was a teenager. 90s, whatever it was. I was at a house party and this song came on and I rapped the entire song because I know it by heart. I could still sing it by heart. But it has a word in there you're not supposed to say. But that was back in the day where you just sang the song, right? I was just singing the song. And then the guy's like, you can't sing it. You can't say it because it's in the song. You can't say that word. And I think everybody knows what the word is, right?
Right.
It's New Jack
Hustler. No, what is it, Aaron?
You're never repeating it. New Jack Hustler, New Jack City, Ice-T. And my friends were all like, yeah, you can't. It's part of the song. And we had that whole debate. It started off as like this guy was like wanting to start a fight. And then it became like this fantastic conversation where we had like a 45-minute diatribe about the appropriateness of singing it if it's in a song, whether that's appropriate or not. And we actually had like a real discussion about it. And it was pretty fantastic.
What was the consensus of the group that you were with? I mean, you're alive, so that certainly helps.
Yes, they were all African-American. I was the only white guy there. The consensus was, if it's in the song, it's... Well, what did my buddy Lamont say? He said, it depends on the guy. If I know the guy, he can sing it. If I don't know the guy, he can't sing it. That was his funny rule. But the general consensus from everybody was probably no. Just skip over it, which I have ever since then, honestly. I just skip over it. But New Jack Hustler from New Jack City, Ice-T, you know, the song is, I love that song. I love the beat. As soon as it starts, I can go from start to finish still to this day. I just love the song. Hustler, wore to pull the trigger along. Grip my teeth, spray to every brother's gone. Got my block sewn on my dope spots. Last thing I sweat, sucker punk cop. Move like a king when
somebody
I roll hot.
Somebody needs to stop him.
I'm just saying.
He's going to get to it. It's going to happen and we're going
to. Yeah, he's going to have to stop himself.
I'm just letting you know, I'm not making it up. I can do the whole thing. But it was a cool moment. That was like a cool thing because it started off like this guy just wanted to have a fight. And, you know, my friends weren't going to have that because they knew, you know, I was just singing a song.
He knew you. Lamont knew you. He said,
seriously,
no,
that's
fine.
What he said. He's like, no, I know him. I know him. It's okay. And I'm like, no, it's obviously not okay, man. He's like, no, it's okay. I'm like, it's not okay. And then we had a big discussion about it. It was great. And never sang it.
I love that sparked a conversation, though. Like, that makes me really happy.
Oh, those were the days.
Those were the days where you could do that. I don't think that would happen that way this day. Somebody would take a video, put it on YouTube, and change the context completely, you know, even though everybody was singing the same song. So it's not like, anyway. Next one is Bob Seger's Shakedown from Beverly Hills Cop 2. Most people don't even remember this song, but I freaking love it. It's just one of those, it takes me back to the 80s. Shakedown, breakdown, takedown, everybody wants it to, you know.
Didn't you and Brian Williams, old former host, sing this together at some point?
Probably. We both love it.
So I feel like you guys did.
Probably on.
There's a rendition
go
somewhere.
Go dig through the episodes if you can find it. Feel free. Next up, The Crow. There's another Crow song on mine. I had a really tough time between Dead Souls and this one, but it's definitely this one. This would make my 10. That's Burn by The Cure. It's just a song where I can put it on. It's very haunting. It's very in your head. Well, the whole soundtrack's haunting. I keep using that word. But it gets in your head, and it definitely paints a picture of that movie, that feeling of loss. And it's just something in summer. You know, I don't want everything to be like, woohoo. You know, sometimes I just need something to make you feel, to bring you down a little bit, I guess. And that's what that song is for. I got three left. And they're all three weird, but Weird Science from Oingo Boingo. I love that song. I love it.
Yeah.
You too?
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic song. It's a great song. I actually loved it when they, I believe they brought it back up in, oh my God, what the hell was that? It was off the book, and it's a popular book and video games. Come on, work. Oh, well, it'll come to me.
Well, that'll be great when the show's over. You know, it's a song. If you never saw the movie, you know, in my heart and in my hand, why can't people understand my intentions? It's just Oingo Boingo is a band that you either got them or you didn't. They're very much like Depeche Mode in the '80s, where you either got their style of music or you did not. And most people, I would say probably did not. It was very much a cultish kind of underground vibe. They weren't super popular, but if you didn't know this, here's a fun fact. Danny Elfman, he's the major composer that's made a lot of themes and music that people love, was from Oingo Boingo. That's where he's
I did not
from.
Know that.
Mm-hmm. Fun fact. Great song. Great song. Robert Downey Jr. is in that movie. So is Anthony Michael Hall. It's a great cast. It's a great movie. Better song. Next up, Real Genius, one of my favorite comedies of all time, Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Oh my God. Love Tears for Fears. And I loved it whenever they kept on popping back up in Psych.
He's just playing at that guy's pool randomly.
Uh-huh.
There's something about that song. Everybody knows the song, right? But I first heard it in Real Genius. That's really where I came to even appreciate Tears for Fears. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but that song in particular, if I'm having an awful day, or if I'm having just a bad week or something like that, I can put that song on and I automatically feel better. Now, I don't know why.
Ready Player One.
Yeah, that's definitely not where I got it from. But
I'm sorry.
He was on the other song.
I was trying to figure out what that song that I the movie
Weird
that
Science?
I forgot where. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, we got the answer before the end of it. Cool. But yeah, so like that's the song that I put on to make me feel better. Now, when I want to feel worse, or let's just say somebody cut you off in traffic and it's summer, you got the windows down and you're just pissed and you're just feeling like, oh, I just want to run a car into somebody, but I can't because that's bad. So I just need I just need music to make me feel like I'm kicking somebody's ass right now. I put on Killing Strangers from John Wick. That's where I really started to love that song. Not that I hadn't heard it before, but I really started to love it then. But it's from Marilyn Manson. It's called Killing Strangers. And it's just that whole music, the whole beat, it's very dark and somber. But it also feels like as you listen to it, you just get a mental picture of all the people you're mad at and you're just kicking their ass in your mind. And I love that.
Yeah, it's a very dark, but and you use the word haunting, and I feel like that's a really good one for this song in particular, but it does give you the imagery that he's hoping to give you. And it's definitely like, if you were to do an exercise with that song, I would probably like the punch bag thing. Poo poo.
I run to that song. I
do you?
Yeah. I've run to that song for a while now. It's a great beat.
I guess I wouldn't have even thought about running to that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something that Marilyn Manson was always really great at. If anything, they were brilliant at creating these marches, mm-hmm. as I like to call them. Like everything he does, you can do a run or a march to them, and there's actually a quality to that, that is why it attracted so many listeners, is because everyone can get together and there's just something about it that makes everyone move in unison.
I love how they changed his voice a little bit too. Like when he says, it's like a little distorted.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it sound a little bit more eerie than his voice can normally sound. And I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, if you saw John Wick, they use that music throughout a lot of the movie. It's just, they don't necessarily have the vocals, you know, it's just like they use the audio, mm-hmm. and it's a great fit for that world. So those are my 10. All right, Amanda, you can don't take as long, but just run through your honorable mentions that you had some.
Okay, I can do that. I can be quick. So first up, another brick in the wall from the Faculty.
Nice. Good one.
Medication from Garbage, which was also on the Faculty soundtrack.
Man, so basically just the entire Faculty soundtrack.
I did narrow it down to three at least. My Own Summer, Shove It from Deftones in The Matrix.
Oh, cool. All right.
Nice. Yeah. In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel from Say Anything. In your eyes.
Light the heat. I am complete. Who?
Yeah, back when I believed in stuff like that, that was a great song. Like,
back when I believed in love, when I would hold my boombox over my head and said, please. And the girl's like, no, and shut the window.
When you say it like that, it sounds stalker. So sad. Behind Blue Eyes from Limp Bizkit from Gothica.
Oh, nice. You know, I could
love it.
I'll throw another Limp Bizkit in there. Take a Look Around from Mission Impossible 2. That's a great song. That's a great summer song too. Yeah.
They have they've been in quite a few movies, which surprised me when I was doing a little research. Sweet Child of Mine, Guns N' Roses from Big Daddy.
Sweet Child of Mine. Yeah. Yeah. That's my Axl Rose impression. You're welcome, world.
Not terrible, honestly. this one is a little bit, these last two are actually from Fast and the Furious movies. We Own It, 2 Chainz and Wiz Khalifa from Fast and the Furious 6.
Nice.
And then Danza Kuduro by Don Omar from Fast 5.
Oh, yeah.
Never going to be an honorary Mexican with that. Nope.
No.
Yeah, you completely butchered it. But I did. Yeah, I know exactly which one you're going for.
It's got that, like, that's the song I would listen to on the beach. You know what I mean? Like, it is, I want a drink in my hand. I want the wind. I want the sun. I have no idea what they're saying in half the song, but it's beautiful.
You know, I'm cracking up because that's 8 songs that you just mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Like, your honorable mentions are supposed to be like 2 or 3 things, maybe, but you brought like a whole nother list on top
he
of it.
He told me a max of 10 for the honorable mentions, and I thought it was because I got to talk about them. He meant there's like, you can add them to the playlist, yeah. And I didn't realize that.
That's right. I probably got like 8 or 10 too. So what do you got, John?
Well, mine is easy because it was the whole soundtrack for Judgment Night, which I can't pick out anything that I specifically want besides the entire soundtrack for Judgment Night. And much like that, I say the same thing to the soundtrack for Sucker Punch.
Mm.
I love that soundtrack. There's just so many songs that take you in all these different directions. Every single one of them are dreamy and wistful in their own little way. And some of them are angsty and some of them are just, you know, are airy and can take you away. And some of them are just powerhouse songs. So, yeah, I love that soundtrack entirely.
Also, some of the songs that were covers from that album were made by Tyler Bates, who's done a lot of music. Yeah. For John Wick.
Yeah. Good composer.
Super talented.
Anything else, John, or that's just you want to mention 2 complete soundtracks?
I just wanted to mention 2 complete soundtracks, because if we're just going to be adding a whole lot of other songs to it, why not 2 complete soundtracks?
There you go.
All right, I'll try to...
And I didn't realize that this was like summer movies was like all the soundtracks out there in the world, because that would have changed my entire focus.
It was like, what do you play in summer? I was going to have you try to figure out like... It started in May or June. What defines when summer starts? And then it can't
John
be after
did.
August. Well, good, man.
Yeah, that's totally what I did.
I appreciate the level of dedication you've given this podcast this week.
There was at least 3 other soundtracks I didn't touch because there was like October, couple in December. I couldn't even touch them.
I'll reiterate once again, Judgment Night. That's a great one to mention, and I hope people will find it. Yeah. I couldn't put on Spotify. It would have made my top 10, I promise you, but they didn't have it in Spotify, so I didn't add it, which is City of Crime from Dragnet. I just love that song. I don't care if, obviously, it's not popular because it's not on Spotify, but I just think it's fun that Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks did a rap song together. I just think that was great. I'll try to whip through them. There's from I Know What You Did Last Summer, Hush.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I can't remember the band, but it's on the playlist. So you find that it's like, yeah. it's a remake, I believe, of an older song, but I just love their version of it. Then you've got from Purple Rain, Prince, Let's Go Crazy. I mean, come on.
Sure. That's pretty given.
From Eurotrip, Scotty Doesn't Know.
Oh, yes.
Scotty Doesn't Know.
From Fiona Lostra or whatever.
Did it in my van every Sunday.
Every Sunday. She tells him she's at church, but she doesn't go. Still, she's on her knees, but Scotty doesn't know.
I still to this day promise you I tried to play that at Mr. Scott Clark's wedding, former host of The Hollywood Outsider, and his wife said no.
I sing it to him a lot. I just like randomly.
Everybody named Scott should hear that song once in their life. That's what I firmly believe.
It's devastating, but it's great.
It's even funnier in the movie. Stuck in the Middle with You from Reservoir Dogs. It just makes me feel like summer. It's like, dude, even though if you watch the scene, it's a horrible scene. Mm-hmm. But the movie, the song sprung to me from that movie. Sweet Freedom from Running Scared. John, you know that one, right? Sweet Freedom. Shine the light on me. Nobody Rides for Free from Point Break. Rat. I just love that song. Shut 'em Down from LL Cool J from Any Given Sunday. I love that song. I love it. I love it. Love it. It's another great running song if you've never heard it. And lastly, from Eyes Wide Shut, my favorite artist of all time, Chris Isaak, Baby Did a Bad, Bad Thing.
There's another song I thought about that I love a lot, and I love it every single time it comes up, and it's called Run Boy Run. They used it for a bunch of trailers and a couple, and in The Maze Runner they used it, but it jumps out at me from, they used it in Sherlock the series, and they also used it in The Umbrella Academy in a certain spot. So, but it's such a, like, as far as a song that pumps you up and it gets you going, such a great song.
Also, one of the songs that has been used in so many different movies and TV shows, and I think gets everybody pumped up to run, from Kill Bill Volume 2, was Battle Without Honor or Humanity from Hotai.
Yep.
Yeah.
The instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You guys ready for the listener picks? Top 10?
Yes.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, here we go. Number 10, the Batman 89 theme.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Interesting.
Number 9, The Crow, Burn.
Yeah.
Number 8, Armageddon, Aerosmith. I believe it's Won't Miss a Thing, right? That's a Won't Miss a Thing? Okay. Then you've got...
That was my mom's wedding song.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. Rocky 3, Eye of the Tiger. Star Wars, the Star Wars theme. Jurassic Park, the main theme. Huh. There's a lot of actual instrumentals in this, which is surprising to me. I didn't have any instrumentals because they were all here, so I didn't need to mention them. Back to the Future, main theme. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones theme. Yeah, that would have made my list. So I just took it off so I could make other room for other stuff. The Breakfast Club, Don't You Forget About Me.
That was on my list, but I took it off because it was on here.
Everybody pump a fist right now. What? And Number one, the only reason it's not on my list, the only reason is because it was number one on the listener's list, and I really just wanted the room. Danger Zone, Kenny Loggins from Top Gun. And I went to the danger zone.
Also, when I think of Back to the Future, I think of The Power of Love.
Yeah.
Power of Love.
Amanda, stop with the honorable mentions. We're done now.
I'm not. I'm just saying because there was a Back to the Future.
We're moving on.
I can't believe that was the one that was selected.
I don't know. You've jammed a couple more in here as we've let on here. You've got like, hey, you know, Kill Bill had one. That was pretty good. You got a reference there, so mention that one.
I still maxed out at 10.
Okay. Sounds good. Yes. Power of Love, I would have picked over the theme song, personally.
Me too. It's more memorable. I don't understand it.
It's the power of love. Makes you want to jump on a skateboard, man. Woo! We're done.